The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
The bodybuilding world will never be the same.
Get ready for MD Radio with your host, Sean Ray. We'll take you inside the world of health and fitness with a focus on bodybuilding. Now, here's your host, Sean Ray.
Off for today, but this is Bob Chick stepping in, reviewing the USA Championships. We're just getting back from Las Vegas, Nevada, where, of course, the 2014 USA was in full force. Over 700 athletes taking the stage in all kinds of divisions, and 53 pro cards being handed out. So a show of this magnitude cannot be certainly covered by one person, not even your 2000 USA champion. So, of course, I had to pull in the best of the best, our chief correspondent, Mr. David Bay. What's up, David?
Hey, not much, man. How you doing?
I am doing well, my friend. Back at home, got the grass cut today, had to get all kinds of home stuff done as I was gone for an extended time, had John Lindsay's L.A. Championships 2 weeks ago, and then, of course, just stayed out in the L.A. area and went over to Vegas for the USA, where you and I were on hand, bro, to witness nearly 800 athletes taking the stage, man. That was a big show.
Yeah, you're not kidding. There was a lot of good competitors, not anybody who jumped out as being, you know, the next Phil Heath or Flex Wheeler, but definitely a lot of really high-quality competitors and, you know, a good show by John Lindsay, as always.
Well, there was a virtual who's who, speaking of some of those names you mentioned. Flex Wheeler was in attendance, a former USA winner, along with Dennis James. We had a whole bunch of people. John Lindsay's right-hand man. Actually, I think he is his vice chairman of his district, Tamer El-Gindi, who does a lot of head judging for John Lindsay, also a USA champ, winning his class just a few years ago, now stepping into the role of promoter. And, of course, the list of who's who was went on and on. Every judge, every promoter, pretty much anybody who was anything in this industry was there in attendance.
Yeah, a couple of former Mr. USAs, too, aside from the ones you listed. Chris Cormier was there. Quincy Taylor was there, a guy who won it the year after you in 2001. So it was, there was a lot of big names in the house, that's for sure.
Well, some of those big names came to the stage. Let's get right into it, Dave. We did some wrap-up, which people can see the video, course right on MD, and you and I taking that after the competition and kind of going over the breakdown. But here on the radio, we can get into things a little bit more in depth, as obviously we try to keep video to a minimum. Let's start right at the top, though. Overall winner and the super heavyweight winner, Nick Trigilli, came out. He was the runner-up, I believe, just 2 years ago. I don't think he was in last year. I believe it was 2012 he was the runner-up, and then he kind of mysteriously disappeared last year. And then he reemerged this year a little bit better and a little bit bigger and was enough to take those super heavyweights.
Yeah, you know, Nick showed up and he wasn't as razor sharp as I would have liked to have seen him, but he's a big guy. He's got really good aesthetics for a super heavyweight, and that's mainly carried him through to that first place spot. Definitely didn't have an easy time, had to go through John Ward, who, despite having some issues controlling his stomach a little bit, I think John was probably at his best all time too. So, it was a good win for Nick. I don't think he's too far off, being able to jump into the IFBB. I think he's going to have to bring up his quads a little bit and work on his conditioning a little. But, I think Nick's going to make a good addition to the IFBB.
Yeah, I agree with that. The legs definitely are going to have to come up. I think he knows that, and I think that's something he's been working on. Probably the reason we didn't see him last year, but some wise time spent in the gym, because I'm not so sure he would have increased his placing, from that previous runner-up finish. So I think that was a wise move, good strategy in that. He did have his hands full. Jonathan Ward, who was in the last 3 years, went from 13th in 2012 to 5th last year to now runner-up, and it was so tight between these guys that the judges actually sent me a note up to the stage saying that they wanted to take another look at him at night, which is interesting. Now, that doesn't happen in every class, but the judges do reserve the right to take a look at anybody they want. Of course, if it's close between whatever, fourth and fifth, first and second, or sometimes the entire top five, they will send that note up to whoever's at the helm, and that happened to be me. And it was close, and I think you're spot on, though, David. I think was the midsection the difference between Jonathan winning or Nick?
I think even if you take away the issues John had with his midsection, as far as just, and I don't think it was necessarily huge. It's just he wasn't controlling it. You know, he was. If you see some of the pictures online, in his side tricep and in some of his poses, and especially in his transitions, he was relaxing it a little bit. But I think structurally, I mean, even when John was keeping his stomach in tight, I think Nick just had a little bit better V-taper. But it was close. I mean, I don't think a lot of people would have been upset with those top two guys being flip-flopped. I think a lot of people could make an argument for John Ward having won it and for Nick. So, like you said, it was really close. If I had to speculate as to why Nick got the nod over John, I'm going to go with aesthetics as a whole. But again, John does need to work on controlling his stomach. So,
well, I think that's something that needs to be stated even more, because there's another gentleman we'll get into in another class that ended up winning. But I thought that was also a distraction. But I want to stay on the supers just for a minute. Jonathan Ward, I'm suspecting we will see probably at the North Americans and or the Nationals should he need it. I can't imagine that he could come in off enough. Assuming that he comes in the equal condition that he did this competition, David, that he wouldn't garnish a pro card at either one of those two shows.
Yeah, I don't. If John decides to move forward, and I haven't talked to John, or I didn't talk to John after the show, and I'm not really sure what his plans are. He was visibly very disappointed on stage, which, you know, some guys try to, you know, put their hand up in the air and put a smile on and walk up and get their placings. John, you could tell, was pretty disappointed. So, sometimes guys want to regroup and take some time off after that. Sometimes they want to just gun for the next opportunity to get a pro card. But I agree with you 100%. I don't see any way, if he can repeat his conditioning he brought to the USA's, I don't see any way he's not turning pro either at North Americans or Nationals should he decide to do both of those shows.
Yeah, I think you got to go for the jugular at this one. I mean, he's so close. Like I say, it's, you know what, you're in condition now. If he can bring that waist down, which he could do because he's in shape right now, he doesn't have to major overhauling. He doesn't need major structural problems. Obviously, he was good enough to be considered for the win, and it was very close between those two guys. So my advice is to him, of course, David, would be to move on, like I say, go into North Americans or go into Nationals, get that pro card, and then obviously you can, you know, work on your pro career. But on a side note, these two guys seem to be jawing it up pretty good on stage. You'd almost think like they didn't like each other. It turns out it's just the opposite as we talked to Nick. And they're actually pretty good friends, and they kind of enjoyed kind of having the friendly rivalry on stage and mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked. I don't want to say shocked, but I wasn't sure what to think about what was going on. We saw a lot of elbows being thrown in your rear double bicep shots and stuff like that. And head judge Steve Weinberger, Steve's been cracking down on that a lot at national level shows lately. You think it makes for some controversy or some excitement for the crowd, but Steve is not a big fan of these guys, bumping elbows and hogging up space on stage. But it's good to hear that it was all in good nature. You know, we forget that sometimes it's so competitive up there. We forget that a lot of these guys at this level know each other. They're friends with each other. And when you get next to one of your buddies on stage, you're going to have some fun with it, even though you're competing against them.
Well, another guy was having some fun out there, but came up a little short. Third place finisher, Dusty Hanshaw. Now, he's been third a few times. He's always in the mix, but Dusty's one of those guys where you got to applaud him for his work ethic. He does not have the best genetics I've ever seen. He's a little square, a little boxy in the midsection, but carries a good amount of muscle. Conditioning is always pretty good. He's only coming in one show, I think, recently that I've seen him that he was off the mark. But, you almost can feel the frustration for a guy like Dusty, because no matter what he does, if there's just a guy or two or three that have better genetics, he's always going to be in that top five, but always going to be relegated to third to fifth placings.
Yeah, Dusty's going to have to come in absolutely shredded to a show. And I don't mean, hey, you're in good shape for a national level show. I mean, he's going to have to come in peeled to the bone to have a chance at earning a pro card. Being from Wisconsin, we had a guy that most people know by the name of Art Atwood, won his pro card at Nationals in 2001, and, And granted, Art had quads that were out of this world, which is kind of a weak spot for Dusty in comparison to the rest of his physique. But, you know, Art knew, talking to Art back in the day, he knew that the only way he was going to turn pro and the only way he was going to be competitive as a pro is if he came in just peeled to the bone. And he did that, and, you know, he moved through the national ranks really fast, won his pro debut and in 2002, beating guys like Marcus Rule and, you know, and a couple other big names. But Dusty's going to have to do the same thing. So I'm not saying that Dusty doesn't have a shot at a pro card, but if he's going to have a shot at a pro card, he's going to win it on conditioning and nothing else.
Absolutely, David. Well, rounding out the top five was Mark Dattucci, and who's a new guy. I hadn't seen him prior to this show. And an old friend of mine in fifth place, Ambrose Middleton. He's actually out of Houston. He's competed in the Masters Nationals in the past as well. So he's no spring chicken out there, but carries a good amount of muscle and then look very respectable in his fifth place showing. Interesting note, Eddie Bracamonte, we couldn't remember his last name when we were doing the review, but I knew his first name was Eddie because I've seen him a whole bunch of times. He was a runner-up in this show last year. I thought he was a very good-looking guy on stage, you know, carried himself well, posed well, presented well, had some good muscle and aesthetics and all that. But, boy, he got no love from this panel, Dave. I mean, he was kind of buried after that first call-out. And then a second call. He ends up in eighth place here, but man, that's kind of a fall from grace from second to eighth.
Yeah, you know, he was definitely not as sharp as he was last year. And he's, as far as I know, he's a West Coast guy. So a lot of these judges that are at the USA's are the same judges that have seen him in the other shows he's done out there at different NPC levels. And the one thing that, you know, some of these guys run into is if you're seeing the same judging panels, sometimes you get compared to an older version of yourself. So if Eddie steps on stage, maybe he's better than some of the guys that placed ahead of him. But if the judges start looking at him and saying, wow, he's far off from where we've seen him in the past, you know, sometimes that has an effect on your placings. I mean, you know, when you look at the way the shows should be judged and how things should play out, you know, it really shouldn't matter whether you're at your best or not, as long as you're better than, you know, the guys you're competing against. But he was, you know, to me, he was visibly off from his form last year, and, you know, his placing reflected it.
Well, a golden opportunity missed there. I hope Eddie regroups. He does have a physique worthy of being in the IFBB Pro League, so hopefully we'll see him
Absolutely.
Kind of regroup and get his butt up on that stage at the Nationals or the North Americans, because I think this kid can do some damage. He just needs to bring that conditioning back to go along with the size, and I think he's pretty much a shoe-in for that. I want to give a shout-out, Dave, to seventh-place finisher Gabe Moe. And Gabe's a regular on the MD forums. He's very upfront and, you know, pretty much posts everything for everybody to see. And, you know, not shy about putting his opinion out there. He seemed to be kind of trekking pretty good. I've been following Gabe, you know, on his Facebook and, of course, at the MD forums. And all his pictures prior to the show looked pretty good. But on stage, I got to be honest, it just... You know, it's kind of same old for Gabe. It just, you know, nothing really looked that improved. I mean, he finished better. I mean, he ends up in seventh place here, which is an improvement over last year. But, you know, kind of missing the mark, Dave. Is it a genetic thing or is it a program thing?
You know, I've known Gabe for a long time, and he's a super nice guy and very popular for a good reason. But he seems, from what I've seen, to have a real hard time bringing it together the last couple weeks. You know, I know he's got a pretty hefty travel schedule and has for a long period of time, being a good looking dude at 6'4" that's been sponsored for as long as he's been competing. But it's one of those things where he's got a lot of things working against him, and the most notable is that he's 6'4". I mean, so even though you stand next to Gabe, I mean, the pictures of Gabe are deceiving. They're very deceiving because, you know, the guys on the forum see a picture of Gabe and it's like, well, here's a tall guy and he looks like maybe he doesn't have his frame filled out. You stand next to Gabe in person, he is a big dude, you know, so you look at him and you're like, well, if he looks like that picture's next to these other guys, how much bigger is he going to have to get to fill out that frame? And, you know, I think he's probably in his early 30s, and so it's like, you know, unless he makes some kind of drastic changes to put on a lot more muscle, and it's not like he's not a muscular guy. Again, Gabe is huge. But on a 6'4" frame, he's just gonna have to be a monster on stage, and he's gonna have to bring in better conditioning. So, he was better though. I mean, in Gabe's, you know, defense for how the weekend went down, he was definitely better than he has been in the past. And, you know, sometimes that's, just a stepping stone to make more improvements. We've seen it with other guys, you know, even John Ward, like we said earlier, placed, you know, 15th or 14th 1 year, fifth the next year, second the next. So, I think I speak for everybody when I say I'd like to see Gabe, you know, continue to make progress and maybe sneak into the top five one of these years.
Well, the number 300 is going to be key. Not that that's a movie Gabe needs to watch, but that's pretty much where he's going to have to come in on that big giant frame to be a factor. So keep pumping, Gabe. We're all out rooting for you,
buddy. Absolutely.
So into the heavyweights. Now, this was another closely contested show and also one that the judges want to take a very close look at it. And when the smoke cleared, it was Frank Stinson, Stinson, I should say, in first place. I thought Frank looked good, but I got to be honest, bro. Now, he came down from the super heavyweights, I believe,
right, in
the past. Now, I don't think that was a bad move. I think that was probably the smartest move he made. But I got to be honest, David, even though he won the class, the midsection to me was still the standout. A very tough time kind of controlling that midsection. And for a lot of the people wondering why he didn't win the overall over Nick, I'm going to point right to that, buddy.
Yeah, you know, if you're going online at the MD contest picture section and you see this guy hitting a front double bicep and his rear double bicep, people are going to question, like, are you serious? He has a big waist. But again, it was a similar case as with John Ward. As you know, when these guys are getting into their poses, they're keeping their stomach tight when they need to keep it tight. But when you're going through chin, it's not like the judges are closing their eyes and then once you hit your pose, they open them back up. When you're going through your transitions, when you're setting up, Chris Aceto was sitting behind me. He was about as frustrated as a coach could be with the amount of time Frank was spending getting into his poses. He was setting these things up like he was getting ready to win an Oscar. And in the time that he was using to set his poses up, he was not controlling his stomach at all. Now, as anybody's going to see, he does have an umbilical hernia. That's pretty distracting. So for as good as his physique is, those things are hard to overlook. But again, I don't think it's an issue that he has this gigantic waist, and you'll see that in pictures. But, man, when he's posing, it's just like, I mean, when they work you pretty hard, you know, it's easy to kind of lose focus of that and, you know, just kind of breathe through the stomach. But when you're at that level, everything's got to be on point, not just when you're in your pose. You got to remember the judges are looking at you the whole time.
I got to be honest, David, I can almost feel the frustration from Coach Chris Aceto, because the last thing, it's actually the complete opposite strategy of what you want to do if you're having an issue with the stomach, if you've got an umbilical hernia, if you've got all of the above. The longer you take to get into a pose, the more you're breathing. I mean, and you're breathing in and out, and these guys are up there, they're gassing it, you know, by the time, you know, this is the night show, they've already done the prejudging, they, you know, they're into the throws, they've just won their class, and they're out there the overall. That is not the time to be taking your time, like you say, kind of setting the legs and getting ready. And look, this ain't the pros, man. This is the USA, and you got a guy that's already into the pose for 5, 6, 7 seconds. So my advice there would be to do the complete opposite. Get into the pose quickly, and then get yourself reset.
Yeah, like I said, Chris Aceto had some choice words when he was sitting right by me, and he was not happy, and rightfully so. I mean, some of these guys, you know, with certain poses, you know, you're hitting the rear double bicep, you want to show off your Christmas tree and your hamstrings and stuff, so you're setting this up. But it's like, you know, some of these guys were getting in their poses, and they were only in their pose for a second or two before, you know, the head judge calls the next pose, and it's like you're barely getting compared. So I agree. It's not the IFBB. They're not giving you 15, 20 seconds. Sometimes they're burning through these. So you got to get into your pose, and especially if you're having a hard time controlling your stomach through those transitions.
Well, one thing I'm sure Chris was pleased about is that Frank moves on. He gets his pro card for that heavyweight win. It was not without a battle, though, Dave, because Sean Lindo, who ended up in second place, I tell you, he pushed Frank for everything he had. A lot of people could have had that flip-flop the other way. But very close competition between one and two.
Yeah, they both brought in really good conditioning. I think Frank was probably just a little bit sharper than Sean was size-wise. I think they were pretty close. I think Frank might have had a little bit better V-taper than Sean, but it was definitely a good battle between the top two and the heavyweights, I'll say that.
Well, third place was Phil Vissacaro. Fourth was Josh Wade. Fifth place was a guy named Benny Brantley. Now he's a disciple of George Farah, who I'm obviously very familiar with. And I tell you what, if you were giving out a pro card for genetics and for the ability to be a good pro, this guy would have taken it all day long. I tell you, what a physique. Round muscle bellies, beautiful structure and shape. The only thing he was losing, was missing out on, was that lack of conditioning. Now, that's not normal for a George Farah disciple, but I understand he's very new, very fresh. George, I'm obviously going to learn his physique very quickly, but that's a name I think people should put on their radar list, Benny Brantley, for getting a pro card very soon.
Yeah, I had mentioned that in the play-by-play as well, that if when he was up doing his posing routine at night, I said something along the lines that, you know, you have to look at who has the most potential out of anybody in this show. I think it was Benny Brantley, and he wasn't just a little bit off. I mean, he was pretty far off, and for him to still make it in the top five at a national level show, being as off as he was, speaks volumes about just how good he is. A lot of muscle, incredible aesthetics, and full round muscle bellies. So normally if a guy comes in as off as Benny was at a national level show, they're going to be lucky to make the top 15, much less the top five.
Well, David, a guy that me and you interviewed at the Junior Nationals, Dorian Haywood, who won that show earlier in the year, making his debut here at the USA. He can only muster a seventh-place finish, but a very successful year for Dorian. Cali Muscle, that's a guy I know, and most people do from the commercials. You've seen him direct in traffic and the Geico commercials. You've seen him on all kinds of stuff. He was in the show, 11th-place finish for him. And a friend of ours, Matt Porter. Now, most people know that name from a coach's standpoint, as Matt gets a lot of people ready for competitions. Got himself ready for this one, but I think little people were a little bit disappointed with his 13th place finish. Justified?
I think everybody set the bar really high for Matt, but a lot of people forget that this is Matt's first national level show. So he's, for as good of a coach as he is, and I've seen a handful of his guys get ready throughout the course of the year, show up absolutely peeled from head to toe. The guy who won the heavyweights and the overalls at the Junior USA this year was in incredible condition. He was one of Matt's guys, and he's bringing a lot of guys in really good shape. But sometimes when you're doing a diet for yourself, and this is one of these things that we talk about all the time. Obviously, you're the normal host of MD Radio, Sean Ray, not big on gurus. But sometimes the guys who are the experts in getting other people in the good shape don't quite tweak it 100% like they do for the people they're helping. Now, that's not to say Matt wasn't in good condition. Matt was in very good condition, but he wasn't quite that super dry, razor sharp that we've seen from some of the guys he's prepping. And sometimes it's more difficult to prep yourself for a show. You question your decisions a little bit more. Should I do this? Should I do that? Whereas when you have a coach, it's like, okay, well, here's what I'm supposed to do. Here's what he sent me. This is the sheet of paper I got stuck in my fridge. I'm not going to stray from that game plan. So, I think, like you had said, people might have seen it as a disappointment just because they see how shredded his guys get. But he was, he was still in really good shape. His first national level show, and, definitely top 15, respectable, not where he wanted to be, but he's got some things he needs to bring up. He still needs to bring up his quads. He's got to do some work on his chest, but he's a relatively young guy, I think late 20s, early 30s, so he's got room to grow.
Well, I got a chance to meet Matt last year, I think after the juniors or one of the shows, and seems like a really good guy. Met him and his girl over at Max Muscle when I was visiting our good buddy Dave Borlée. I got to call Matt out, though, for one thing, David, and he's very smart. He's very educated. He's one of the gurus, respectfully, out there that, again, he's responsible for getting a whole lot of people in shape, and he seems to do a good job. But Matt made one of the cardinal rookie mistakes that I've ever seen. He actually had that goldish stuff. I don't want to say the name because, I get in trouble when I count out people for their specific products, but it was a gold pasty color that he put on, something you may dream about in your if you're going to sleep dreaming about how to screw up a show. But I got to be honest, man, that stuff will ruin a physique. It will take 10 to 15% off you in terms of hardness and sharpness. But I can't think of a worse thing to put on your physique than that stuff, which has a gold hue to it, which it's a pastel color. It just reflects the light, and it makes you look about as soft as you can be. Bad move from Matt.
Yeah, any sort of cream-based tanning product, great for guest posing because you're not in contest shape, and you can put it on and wash it off that same day. It's horrendous for competition. And I don't know if it was a case where Matt had his spray tanning done and he wasn't happy with the spray tan. Didn't feel like he was dark enough, and so last minute he decided to use that product. Or maybe he's used it in the past under different circumstances, maybe on its own, or maybe with another tanning product or whatever. Like you touched upon, Matt is, he's one of the smartest guys in this industry that you'll ever talk to. Very articulate, pays very close attention to detail, when prepping all his guys and himself, and I have nothing but respect for Matt. But, I was a little perplexed as well. He had a hard time blending it with his neck to his face, and, it definitely didn't help his physique. And I agree with you. I think everybody that puts that on, it hides the conditioning they have. It'll take you from a dry, grainy look and make you look smooth. And, he had discussed it a little bit after the show. We were kind of joking outside, and I think that's the last time you'll see Matt use that hand product.
Well, I'll tell you this. Talk about how funny that stuff is. I remember some years ago I was talking to one of the competitors about using that stuff, and they couldn't have disagreed with me more. They were just really in support of it, and they thought it was the greatest thing since sliced bread and all that. And he says, I tell you how good this stuff is. I got a buddy of mine who has tattoos, and he used it, and you couldn't even see the tattoos. And of course, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, I rest my case.
It's every show without fail, you see a couple of guys wearing it, and I don't know if it's just the convenience. I mean, if you've ever used it, it's great because, like I said, you put it on and you wash it off that night, and you don't have to sit there for 2 or 3 weeks with the fake tan stuff on. And for guys who have normal 9-to-5s during the week, sometimes it can be, I've come back from competitions and here I am sitting at the front desk of a dental office and working with patients and stuff, and I look like an idiot with the pro tan on for a few weeks. But when you're prepping that hard for a competition and you're putting that much time and effort and money for a show like that, I'll do what I have to do as far as a tan and deal with whatever I have to, looking like an idiot for the few weeks afterwards, to make sure I'm looking my best on stage. So
definitely better to look like an idiot for a few weeks than the night of the show. So that's for sure. But I tell you what, for those that don't think it makes a difference, I'm here to tell you it absolutely does. And we saw every gambit in between, David, between that kind of stuff and an inexcusable defense that I hear a lot, or that I see a lot. I shouldn't say here. Is that people aren't dark enough. And we see this over and over. You see a guy and you go, man, he's too, he needs 4 more coats of pro tan or something. He's just too light. And of all the things you can do, of all the things you have to pay attention to, of all the, the preps and all the stuff you got to do, that is the last thing that should ever be a problem.
Yeah.
We'll get into more of what the detailing it takes to get yourself into the USA winner's circle. When we come back, right now we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll break down the rest of the USA, and then the next pro show coming up, the Golden State Grand Prix, after the break.
All right.
This is Lonnie Tieper from Iron Man Magazine, the greatest of all time. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Focus, strength, recovery, results. Introducing Maximize, brought to you by iForce Nutrition. Tired of the same old caffeine buzz? Are you ready to step into a new world of power, energy, and intensity? Maximize has set a new standard in the supplement world, delivering tunnel vision focus, cell swelling volumization, and unstoppable endurance. Don't settle for the current crop of underclothes products. It's time to join the next generation with Maximize, the only pre-workout supplement you need for extreme gains in strength and performance. Don't just train. Maximize your workouts. Visit www.iforcenutrition.com for details.
Over the years, iForce Nutrition has brought you some of the most powerful muscle-building products ever seen in the bodybuilding world. Now, after years of research and development, we are proud to introduce our first launch into the world of thermogenic fat loss with Adipoxil. Adipoxil isn't your run-of-the-mill fat burner. Adipoxil's new and rewriting the definition of fat loss. Adipoxil's competition strength formula is so powerful, in one cycle, you can go from soft to shredded. When being lean isn't enough, get shredded with Adipoxil. For more information, visit iForceNutrition.com.
With over 300 locations and 2 million members worldwide, Powerhouse Gym has been helping people achieve their goals since 1975. Whether you're visiting the gym for the first time or you're a seasoned professional, you'll see why Powerhouse Gym is the strongest name in fitness. Visit PowerhouseGym.com to get a free guest pass to a location closest to you or to inquire about opening your own Powerhouse Gym location. At Powerhouse Gym, you're not just a number, you're family.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you've ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like some banned substances, but rest assured, there's nothing illegal in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB living legend Flex Wheeler. And now you too can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Hey, this is Seth Ferrosi, IFBB Pro, and you're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Everyone knows that beef is king when it comes to building quality muscle mass. Now you can have all the anabolic power of beef with Carnivore. Beef protein isolate from Muscle Mads, packed with 20 times the creatine of steak and loaded with extra BCAAs. Carnivore is more concentrated than whey. Beef up with Carnivore, the most sought-after muscle-building protein ever created. For more information, visit MuscleMadsRx.com.
Arginine and AAKG are dead.
The nitric oxide war is over. MHP introduces NO-Bomb, the world's first clinically tested nitric oxide maximizing formula. Need to experience real workouts and pumps with NO-Bomb.
Anyone who understands the supplement market knows that fat burners as a class of products are virtually dead. Why? Because none of these products have delivered the kind of real results people have been looking for. I'm not kidding when I tell you, that's all over now. Because mitotropin is so powerful and so profoundly different than anything else on the market, we couldn't even call it a fat burner for fear it would be associated with this useless category. That's how good it is. Welcome to the world of mitotropin.
This is IFB Pro Mike Valentino. You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray.
Run! Oh my God! Business as usual, man! Come on! Hey! I still here! It's going in! Run! Yeah!
For the best workout of your life, use Nox Pump, the strongest pre-workout powder in bodybuilding. Get Nox Pump at health food stores everywhere.
Shop the new MD Supplement Superstore, where you can find more of your favorite brands and products, upgraded customer service, and engaging cutting-edge research, along with the industry's most competitive prices.
You're listening to MD Radio with Sean Ray. You want to get in on the action? Call Team MD now at 1-866-472-5788. Now back to MD Radio with Sean Ray. I'm the
truth and these other boys. All right, Bob Chick back with David Bay. We are going down the 2014 USA Championships. We just got back from this weekend's events. And David, when we just before the break we left off, we were going through the lineups here, and some good physiques, but you know, obviously there's going to be one winner in these competitions. We get into the light heavyweights and a battle between Caleb Blanchard and Thomas Lenihan. It seemed like the top two in every class was pretty tight, David, and then it kind of fell off after that.
Yeah, there was definitely a lack of depth as a whole for the show. But like you said, the top guys in the classes look pretty good. You know, we were talking about color a little bit earlier. Thomas Lenihan had some kind of issue as well with his color. At least at finals, which I don't think helped his case a little bit. And Caleb's was spot on. I don't talk about color a whole lot in the play-by-plays just because you assume everybody's going to have pretty decent color, but Caleb's looked fantastic, and Thomas's was off a little bit. So, that makes a difference. But
it can make a big difference. And I'll tell you this, one thing I've seen over the years, you know, back in the day, I always hate to use that expression, but, you had to do everything by hand. I mean, first of all, there was nobody at a show that did color. Unless you brought your girlfriend or your wife or your buddy or your mom or whoever happened to be on hand and you were handing them a paintbrush, you know, dipping it in a glass, bro, and painting it on. But I tell you what, it was old school, David, but it elicited much better color. If you look at picks 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you'll see much better color on competitors, not running all over the place. We see people on stage now, they're sweating bullets, and there's color is literally running off of them, I mean, like in streaks. And one of the reasons behind this is, you know, with all the high-tech stuff we got now you've got companies that do this at shows, and you pay a fee, and they, you know, you go in there and they got the big spray tan thing, and you can be done in minutes, and it looks really nice. The problem I have with it is it's on top of the skin. It looks great until you put oil on it, and then you stand under the lights. And then it just seems it's like a cake melting out in the hot sun. It just seems to kind of start going off. But, you know, call me old school, David, but I'll stick with old school.
Well, you know, I actually had my competition earlier this year. I got spray tan for the first time. And from a convenience standpoint, you know, I didn't have a mess in my bathroom.
Sure.
None of that problem. You just stand there with your hands in the air and get sprayed. The only thing that I noticed, I got two coats on Friday night, and I came home, I had real soft cotton on, I went to bed, I sweat a little bit at night, which a lot of people do, and I wake up, I needed to be retouched in a really bad way. And I think, you know, maybe with some of the spray tans, and nothing against the people who did our spray tanning, there was a lot of people who had a fantastic tan just from the regular protocol, but for me, like I said, I sweat a little bit. And it became an issue. I got touched up in the morning, and that kind of fixed it. But for people who don't have time to get touched up, that can create an issue. But with the old school Pro Tan, you know, you're painting that stuff on with a foam brush, and I think it's soaking into your skin a little bit better. You're standing around letting it dry a little bit more. So I think that has a lot to do with it. I think when you're spraying it on with a spray gun, you're getting a real heavy coat. You know, if people are getting too close and you look as dark as you need to be, and it's like, I just don't know if maybe that's becoming one of the issues where, again, the spray tan companies are spraying it on too thick and too much in an attempt to get people in and out. Because you talk to guys, you know, like you said, back in the day, some of these guys were putting on 4, 5, 6 coats of Pro Tan, but they were very thin coats and they were a lot of time to soak into their skin. They weren't running. They looked a little bit more even. So the other thing today is there's a lot of product too. I mean, you can, you know, there's Olympic Tan, there's Liquid Sunrays, there's Pro Tan, there's all these different tanning products, and everybody's got different skin types and this and that. So sometimes it can be hard to know what's going to work out best for you, and sometimes it's too late before you figure it out.
Well, the attention to detail is certainly something that comes to mind at a show like this. Like I say, color should not be an issue at the end of a, you know, 4 months of prep, suffering, eating sawdust every morning, you know, I mean, the everything that kind of goes into it. The last thing that should be ever an issue is being dark enough. To this day, and I've been in the sport a long time, David, I've never seen a guy lose a show because he was too dark.
Yeah, you have to really, really cake on a lot of tanning product to be too dark on stage. I mean, that's usually the argument is that, hey, this guy was too light, didn't have enough color on. And that was the case with a handful of guys here. One thing I could say, guys, if you're listening, if you have a bottle of Pro Tan that's more than a year old or whatever, throw it out, spend your extra $15 or $20. And you know, Pro Tan is a great product. And I love the way it looks. But it seems to me, because I've had buddies who have done this where you compete and then you take a year off and you come back and compete and, you know, you got your old bottles of Pro Tan that you didn't finish. sometimes that stuff, I don't know what happens to it over the course of a couple of years, but sometimes it can give you like a funky yellowish or even a greenish look. And we've all seen people get on stage with that little bit of a green tone. And I think that's from using an old tanning product. So guys,
you don't know how right you are, my friend. Let me tell you, I have extensive history with Pro Tan. I actually know Stacy Kaufman, who actually started the company back in the 80s. That's how far back I go. But that's not your eyes. Is that playing tricks on you or even glaucoma setting in, Dave? What that is, is if you notice, if you look on the ingredients, Pro Tan is a alcohol-based product. And for anybody of us that have competed, if you ever had a slight cut from a razor or anything like that, you'll know it's alcohol-based really quick as you're screaming, obviously. But that's also responsible for it sucking into the skin, though, is because of that alcohol base. That's why I always felt it was a much better product. But yeah, if it gets old, like any alcohol, it'll ferment. So what ends up happening is it turns green on you. That's when you see those people on stage and they look like they stepped out of the morgue. But I don't want to spend too much time on color. Listen, you can catch us on the MD forums. I'll give you all the color info you want, guys. And, you know, you look like a USA champ yourself next time you're on stage. What I do want to talk about is the only blowout in the whole show came in the middleweights. And with all due respect to the top five that competed, the guy who ends up number one, Brian Belzano, was absolutely out of this world. I mean, this guy can make an instant splash into 212, in my opinion. Doesn't really have to change too much, even at a weight of probably just under 180 or so. Well, he had to be under 180 to be in the middleweights, even if he bumps it up. This guy was ripped. He was in great condition. He had great muscle, great separation. I got to be honest, bro, in the overall, I would have given this guy a nod, perhaps.
Yeah, I think everybody that was there was a little bit disappointed that he didn't get moved to the middle. I mean, obviously, when you weigh 176 pounds and you got to stand next to a guy that weighs 260, you're gonna get out muscled. But as far as a complete bodybuilder from head to toe, quality muscle, Brian looked. I mean, he looked incredible. And it was only a second show. I talked to Justin Compton, helped him get ready, and Justin was texting me during prejudge saying, "Hey, watch out for my guy." And it was only his second show. He did the Mike Francois Classic, won the novice middleweights and the overall, won the open middleweights and the overall, and Justin sat down with Brian and Mike Francois. Apparently, Mike's advice was, look, you're not at a point where you need to be hitting up a junior show. That's not the next step for you. You need to be going straight to a pro qualifier. Shows up at the USA is just, like you said, he blew everybody away. He had as good a conditioning as you could expect from any bodybuilder. He was very complete from head to toe. For being only 22, you could tell he was a little bit nervous on stage, but you know, for the most part, his composure on stage was good. And I agree. I would have liked to have seen him, you know, it would have been interesting to see him put in between Frank and Nick later for the overall.
Well, like you said, David, it's tough to give up. I mean, people got to put this stuff in perspective. This guy is 176 pounds or thereabouts. All right, just to give you guys an idea, okay? Nick Trigilli is on stage at, I don't know, I'm going to guess and say 240-something. So, I mean, you're looking at a lot of weight there. I mean, it's a huge difference, and it does make a difference. And for those who think it don't, when you see a middleweight who looks outstanding, and then he usually gets put next to a super heavyweight or a heavyweight, sometimes they just look like little kids out there. They just don't have enough muscle. And I know it's, you know, people can say, well, you're supposed to just look overall and size shouldn't make any difference. Listen, this is bodybuilding. Size does matter.
Absolutely. At Nationals this last year, Thomas Anderson, the guy, he was just in Chicago Pro doing the 212. When Thomas was out by himself for awards, I, you know, from what I had seen of Kevin Jordan and Ryan Padaracki and even Chris Tuttle in the light heavyweights, I had said that this guy is your overall winner, hands down. Nobody's going to compete with him. And then, you know, a couple of the guys behind me were like, wait till he stands next to some of the bigger guys. And sure enough, you put him next to, you know, Kevin Jordan and the other guys, and he just got lost in the mix. So,
well, congratulations to the rest of the class winners. Welterweight winner Eric Martinez, lightweight winner Brian Homer, and bantamweight winner Joshua Thompson. Congrats to all IFBB pro cards to all the class winners. And, of course, a special congrats to overall winner Nick Trigilli. That's going to bring us to the IFBB. Coming up, David, this week, Hani Rambod and crew putting on the 2014 Golden State Grand Prix. That's up in Sacramento, California. And we're getting down there, David. You got basically two shows left if you're an IFBB pro looking to make it the Joe Weider's 50th Olympia this year.
Yeah, the lineup got just released today, so you guys can go on Musker Development and check it out. It's right now there's only 11 guys signed up for the show, but the top six, top seven is going to be interesting. So I'll run through this real quick. We got Mo Benel from Lebanon, one of George Farrow's guys, took I think fifth or sixth last year at Tampa. Tony Freeman, Johnny Jackson, Ken Jackson out of Michigan. We have Mexican competitor Manuel Lomeli on win. Jojo Nectoro, Essa Obiad, Manuel Romero, Akeem Williams, and Brian Yurski. So definitely some big names headed out there. A couple guys, you know, hoping to lock down their trip to the Olympia with a win. A few other guys chasing points. So it should be interesting, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what? It's a first of all, I'd be surprised if we don't see a few other names pop in there this week. That seems to be the case always. The last week you might see two, three guys pop up there. I don't have the actual Olympia standings in front of me, but a couple of these guys could stand to point their way to the Olympia. One of those people being probably one of the favorites, and that's my man Jojo Nectoro. Tell you, Jojo has really come into his own this year. He's made huge strides. I mean, he went from being kind of a middle of a packer to a guy who, the last show, was pushing for the win and actually pushed himself over and above Issa Obiad. So Jojo, really, I tell you what, if this guy ain't flying high right now, bro, with confidence, I don't know when he would be, but he's got to be considered a favorite for this show.
Yeah, he's you know, a little bit of a disappointment for him when he in Chicago last year, kind of regrouped, very impressive at the Dallas Europa in May, and then obviously came into Chicago, got a second place, so a very good Rolly Winkler. So he's racking up some good points. You know, if he places in the top two or three, I think he's going to earn the points that he needs to get to the Olympia. The points race is a little bit funky right now because you have Jonathan De La Rosa sitting on the top with 16 points or something like that. And then it gets kind of funky. You have Evan Santopani, I think, has 7 or 8 points. I think William Bonac has a handful of points for his
place.
No,
Evan's not going in the Olympia, correct?
No, but I'm saying he won't be there. So, you know, that also makes things interesting because Evan's one of the guys right now who's sitting in the top five.
Right.
For the points race. Victor Martinez is sitting around 8 points. Lionel Bajecki's got 8. William Bonac's got 7. Cedric McMillan's got 7. Fred Small's got 7. Johnny Jackson's got 7. So the points race right now, aside from John De La Rosa sitting on top, it's pretty close.
Well, John De La Rosa mathematically can't be pushed out of the top five. So he's definitely in. He can rest assured that he's got a spot in the Olympia. Everybody else is so close. It looks like Johnny Jackson is the one who really stands to make it or break it the most. I mean, he needs a win or at least a second-place finish to get those points to keep him up in the mix because Evan is probably obviously is out, so that's a spot that will free up. And Cedric, I believe, is not going in as well, so that's a spot that will free up. But Jojo obviously is going to be one of the favorites. Issa Obiad will be in there if Issa comes back to form because I do think he was off a little bit the last show. Those two will have a stab at each other again. Tony Freeman, a consummate pro out there, he's going to be in the mix along with Johnny Jackson. But I'm going to give you two names, David. Now, these are my two dark horse picks. I can't even put Joe. I used to call Jojo a dark horse, but I think he's got to be considered a favorite now. But two guys, Ann Wynn out of California, tremendous potential, just great physique, beautiful lines, wide shoulder structure, small waist, sweeping thighs. The kid's got it all. He just needs to bring it down a notch. Yes, he needs a little bit of thickness, but I'm going to give you another name that is not on anybody's radar, but I'm telling you right now, watch this kid out there. He's a big boy, and if he puts it together, he's going to upset a whole bunch of apple carts, and that's Manuel Romero.
I'm not going to argue with you on win. I think he looks fantastic. I think, like you said, he's got to show up a little bit sharper, and he's been pretty sharp, actually. His legs are sharp. He seems to be one of these guys who carries it in his upper back. So if he can pull that together and keep his shape, which is not like he's going to lose his shape or anything or lose a lot of muscle pulling down a little bit. He can definitely make it in the top five again. As far as Manuel Romero, I think he's just another one of these guys where he's just really got to pull it together. I mean, if you take a look at pictures of this guy, his thighs are absolutely insane. He's got a lot of mass, really big arms. So I agree with you. I think he's flying low under everybody's radar, but you know, I think he's going to have to really bring razor sharp conditioning. Otherwise, he's going to get lost in the mix. But he's,
agreed.
I mean, you know, like I said,
but
I mean,
I tell you what, kid's got some structure, man. I tell you, I look at a guy like that, and all I see is potential, man. All I see is a guy with all the attributes. And again, he's not on anybody's radar. I think he got himself a trainer this year, and that might be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the first couple pictures I went off of him a few years ago when he was just kind of breaking into the scene, and it was like, you know, kind of the same thing, like, wow, this guy's got a ton of potential. And, you know, as we know, the word potential gets tossed around a lot, and it doesn't always equal success. But, you know, in this sport, it's like you want to see the guys with great potential fulfill it. It's almost frustrating when you get these guys that could really be something fantastic and they miss the mark on a regular basis. And, you know, all the bodybuilding fans are always looking for the next freak. And, you know, when you get a guy as big as Manuel with the structure that he has, you know, it would be exciting to see him put it all together. And hopefully he can do that this weekend, or if not this weekend, maybe in Tampa a week later.
Well, Ken Jackson, Akeem Williams, and Brian Yerski rounding out that lineup. We saw Akeem Williams earlier, tremendous upper body. The question is can he do anything in such a short period of time to increase his placing, David, or does he just clearly need time in the gym to bring the legs up?
Well, his legs are kind of deceiving, because when he turns to the side, they look like horse legs. I mean,
right.
It's nuts, and so it's like, if his legs are that big from the side, but he just doesn't have the quad mass, it's, you know, it can become tricky training just to bring his quads up. I mean, you know, there's so much mass on the other parts of his legs. How does he just focus on his quads? Obviously, he moves. I mean, the videos of this guy squatting, what, 700-800 pounds? So it's not like he's not going really heavy as it is. So it comes the question, what does he have to do to bring his legs up, or is this just a case where his legs aren't going to come up? You know, we talk about another guy that's in the show, Johnny Jackson. Obviously, with Johnny's powerlifting background, he's been in the game for a lot of years. I'm going to venture and say there's nothing Johnny hasn't tried to bring his legs up. They're just not going to come up. And, yeah, you question as to whether that's the case with Akeem. Obviously, Akeem is young, so he's got time on his side. But, again, with as big as his legs look from front to back, I question as to whether he's ever going to be able to really put on a ton of mass on his quads. I would definitely like to see it. Like you said, he's got an incredible upper body. It'd be pretty good to see him be able to bring those quads up and match his upper body. But, you know, for now, with a couple, you know, months that he's had between Chicago and in the Tampa show, I think, you know, his main focus has to be conditioning. He was in good shape for Chicago, but definitely not as sharp as he needs to be.
Well, luckily for you, David, and all the listeners, I do actually have the answers to what he needs to do, and it is not 800-pound squats. Interestingly, I've known bodybuilders for almost 5 decades now, and every guy I knew that was strong as a bull in a squat, and I'm talking, you know, big squats, 600-700 pounds, you know, that type of thing, always had the same kind of legs, and that was great from the sides, but from the front and the rear, they almost look thin in comparison. So I always wonder if there's a parallel, obviously, with having great strength like that. But hack squats, my friend, hack squats are the answer. You have to train for reps, and you've actually got to train for quad sweep. Now, I know some of that's genetic. I always had tremendous quad sweep, and believe me, I was squatting nowhere near 700 pounds. It's just one of those things. And by the way, David, that was a choice that I just didn't want to squat 700 pounds. Not that I couldn't do it.
Right. That's a lot of weight to be thrown on your shoulders, and you know, obviously a high risk of injury. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think it's just a lot of genetics with these guys, and if you've got great shape for your quads and you train heavy, they're going to grow. But you know, you see a lot of these powerlifter guys, and their quads are straight up and down, and like you said, they're squatting 700-800 pounds, but they don't carry a lot of mass in their quads. And you know, at some point, you got to realize that you got to start doing something a little bit different. Obviously, it's impressive to move that kind of weight, and people love seeing that sort of stuff in training videos. But at the end of the day, if you're competing in bodybuilding, you got to bring up your weak spots. And if moving heavy weight alone isn't bringing up your weak spots, then time to try something different.
Well, big question here is, can the veteran Tony Freeman punch his ticket back to the Olympia. I mean, he's been a veteran. He's obviously very schooled in the art of competing throughout the year. So he's coming in. We haven't seen Tony as much as we have in the past this year. That may be a good thing. But is this a show that Tony can come out and win?
If he's in the right condition, yeah. You know, we saw him in Toronto. He wasn't as sharp as he needed to be. The lineup in Toronto, a good lineup, Juan Morel, Lionel Bajecki, John De La Rosa, and he slipped, I think he was third or fourth there. Tony doesn't have any room to be off in his conditioning. You know, he's not a Rolly Winkler, or he's not a big Rami where he can show up a little bit off and still be walking away with the top spot. So I think that he can win in Sacramento, but I think it's only if he's absolutely peeled, which, you know, we know he can get there, but we haven't seen it yet this year.
Well, we're going to see a rematch between JoJo and Issa. Question for you, David. Has JoJo just caught up and surpassed Issa, obviously as evidenced by his second place finish just a few weeks ago, or was it simply a fact that Issa was just off the mark that show?
I think Issa was just off the mark, and in fact, I think Issa was the biggest we've ever seen him in Chicago, or pretty close to it. I mean, he was huge, especially in his thighs. I mean, there's no question to me that he's bigger than he's been in the past. But his conditioning, again, for as big and as good as Issa is, he's not a guy who can show up off and still carry himself through these shows. And he's another one of these guys, similar to JoJo, in that he can get pretty hard from the front, turn around, and look like a different bodybuilder. And so he's got to focus on making sure that he's complete from all angles and not just his front shots. And, you know, that was JoJo's issue in Chicago last year. JoJo looked really good from the front, turned around, and looked like a different guy. So, you know, this year he just looked that much better from the front and was in condition from the back. So I think unless Issa really, really brings it together, I think we might see a repeat from Chicago as far as JoJo getting a nod over Issa.
All right, time to put you on the spot, David. We've got only seconds remaining. Who wins this show? David Bay going on a limb saying Issa Obiad. I am going to go the other way, and I'm going to take my man JoJo for the win. So we'll see it. The reason they play the game is because we are constantly off the mark when it comes to predictions. So we'll see how it ends up. David, thanks for stopping by. I will see you, my friend, at one of the upcoming shows. That's going to wrap things up for this edition of MD Radio. For David Bay, this is Bob Chick. We're out.
You've been listening to MD Radio, a look at the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. Join Sean Ray again next Monday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel.